The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Premier League gets underway. There's impressive shutouts from last year's top two, City with Burnley, Arsenal with their fans, and another draw for Chelsea and Liverpool. We'll be asking, is the feisty midfield scrapper they both need Roy Hodgson? Is Newcastle's now the best midfield in the league, or is that Enzo Fernandez on his own? And talking by and large, a good start for Spurs without Kane and a bad one for Bayern. All that and much more in this Totally Football Show. Listen, I'm excited to tell you that it's Sunday night still in this podcast. Sunday evening anyway, 13th of August. We've just seen all but one of match day one of this Premier League season. And fresh back from action, we have Jay Harris, who was with the Brentford and Spurs at their Sunday early kickoff.
Hey, James.
How are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
Excellent. And Sasha Gurionov and Matt Davis-Adams, who's raced back from Stamford Bridge after a thrilling 1-1 draw.
Thrilling first half.
Yeah.
Not such a thrilling second half.
Right.
What about you, Matt? You were at the top of the East Stand. I was at the top of the shed in the second half. How did it look like to you?
I'd call it an absorbing contest.
Nice.
Which means, yeah, the second half wasn't as good as the first half.
Well, it was pretty good fun to watch on TV. I think Grace Robertson was saying, let's just abandon having DMs all together from now on, because this is a lot of fun. But yeah, that's not a plan that either club, I guess, are looking to follow up on, because attempts to sign Lavia or Caicedo, etc., rumble on. Beyond that and other kind of more peripheral considerations, what was your moment of the weekend then with one match still to go, Jay?
This is a bit of a random pick, but Emerson Royale's nutmeg on Shandon Baptiste, because it's one of those moments where the entire crowd just went, ooh. It just reminds you that why we love the Premier League, because a random Brazilian right-back just nutmegged someone out of the complete blue.
Very nice indeed. Sasha, how about you?
I enjoyed the way Brighton in the second half went player for player. We're so much better than your Luton players, and we're just going to beat you 1v1. And they kept on doing it throughout the second half.
Brilliant stuff. Matt?
You can rely on me for the serious one. Double dose of Roy Hodgson. First of all, the unsanctioned, no-holds-barred match right. With Max Lowe. Enjoyed that a lot. And then in his post-match interview, in a deliciously Roy way of putting it, I'm pretty certain lots of teams will come here and find 3 points hard to put in their baggage on the way home.
Yeah. But I mean, we've all begun sentences that have left us with no escape route and kind of had to kind of dig ourselves out of a hole with a kind of hastily constructed ladder of words that really don't belong there.
Some of us have tried to build a career on it, James.
Right, right. Well, there you go. I thought it was an entertaining opening to the season. I'm looking forward to discovering what it all meant from you guys. Just check on the results. If you missed it, Friday evening, things kicked off with Man City beating Burnley 3-0. Haaland with a brace, another one from Rodri there. Aggregate score over 12 straight victories against the Clarets is now 43-1. Saturday, Arsenal replied with a 2-1 win over Nottingham Forest. Elsewhere on Saturday, Brighton beat Luton 4-1. Newcastle did Villa 5-1. There was a 1-0 win for Palace at Sheffield United. And it was 1-1 between West Ham and Bournemouth. On Sunday, 2-2 for Brentford and Spurs. 1-1 for Chelsea and Liverpool. And on Monday night, it'll be Man United Wolves. Chelsea-Liverpool. Matt and Sasha, you were there. We'll start with that.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Fernandes. Thomas Light clear, back in by Chilwell. Deserving 1-1!
All right, 1-1 at Stamford Bridge. It was Diaz on a terrific breakaway move from Liverpool that opened the scoring. Chelsea responding with Matt.
Dizazzy, as I was told when I got to the ground, is how we're pronouncing his name.
So Dizazzy.
Fine, yeah.
Nice.
Some nice punning potential there, I feel, later in the season if things don't go so well for him.
Disastrous?
Yeah.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, okay. We're workshopping it, but we'll see.
All right. What a difference. That seemed to be the vibe at Stamford Bridge. What a difference this Chelsea team.
Yeah, totally. A lot of confusion as well when the team sheet came out. Among others, big day for Peter Drury, of course. He came and sought the counsel of the Chelsea TV regulars as to exactly what kind of formation this was going to be, because we were all pretty confused. Mauricio Pochettino seemed to claim that it was a back four, but I don't think it was. Certainly in the second half, they went back into that shape, put Cole at left back. But yeah, really, really surprising to see them start with three at the back, which they played in pre-season for a total of 45 minutes in the second half against Wrexham. So it definitely threw everybody for a curveball. But, you know, that's the impact of the Christopher Nkunku injury, because he was the player who this team was being built around.
So this was a Chelsea side that in the course of this game had 65% possession. That's the most anyone's had against Liverpool, you know, given the way Liverpool normally play in the last 5.5 years, with the exception of Man City. But a lot of, I mean, we can talk about Enzo Fernandez and the role he plays and all of that. But for a side that was without Nkunku, is that why do you think that possession didn't tell in terms of 3 points in their baggage going?
Potentially. Liverpool were better at the start of the game. They had by far the better of the first half of the first half. And the Salah goal disallowed by VAR is clearly the turning point of the game. If that is given, then I think Liverpool win the game comfortably. But Chelsea were able to wrestle back control of it pretty effectively. And yeah, I mean, it maybe put another couple of zeros on Moises Caicedo's fee for both these teams, because it was kind of screaming out for somebody like him in the game. But that made it more fun, particularly in the first half for those of us neutral observers. And I think Conor Gallagher deserves a bit of credit. He's somebody who, kind of like Mason Mount, seems to divide certainly Chelsea supporters and, to a wider extent, people who watch football. I think there's a lot of people who think he just runs around bludgeoning into people and trying to win the ball back. But I thought he was really impressive here after a shaky start, and he's somebody who's permanently linked away with a move. But he really showed his value on a day where he was obviously outshone by other people, including Colwill, who you can totally see what all the fuss is about, you know, playing in at left back for a lot of the game, which is not his natural position. But plenty of encouraging signs for Chelsea.
Joe, were you able to watch any of this game?
I kind of saw the second half, but not a lot of it.
All right.
So best to stick to the experts, and if it jumps
out. Sash, do you want to tell Jay what kind of performance Enzo had to warrant the kind of accolades he's currently getting?
Well, I think for the first half an hour, I don't think Enzo and Gallagher did have a performance to talk about too much, because I thought, and this is what the disallowed goal showed really well, with Trent moving into midfield, Liverpool always had an extra angle which they couldn't close. And I thought the disallowed goal was absolutely beautifully constructed through midfield. The first goal was constructed very nicely as well, with some very sort of swift one-touch passing, which, and again, I was contrasting it to the start of last season when Liverpool went to Fulham and we were just all over the shop on midfield. I thought this time, the first half an hour, they looked pretty polished. But as Matt said, once the goal gets disallowed, I think Chelsea get a little bit more confidence. Of course, they get two goals in quick succession. One gets disallowed. And I think what happens in the second half, and for the second half, I moved from the press box up into upper shed.
Yeah, why was that, Tash?
Because, I would say that from upper shed, this is one of the best views I think you can get in the English league.
Okay.
Because you can see the whole pitch in front of you at a very nice angle.
Tactics cam.
Tactics cam. I mean, from Matt, where Matt sits with the commentators, I think it's a little bit too high up. But in the shed, you kind of still feel the game. And what you could see second half, Chelsea just pulled wide and the ball went wide and Liverpool were too narrow. And this is what I think, where Chelsea kind of, A, on the defensively managed to close the game down, and it hit Liverpool dangerously on the counter quite well. And towards then, Mudrik was running away at Alisson, and Alisson made two or three key saves in the second half.
Mm. Okay. I mean, there were plenty of chances for both sides. But as you say, Chelsea really had a... It looked like if any one team was going to win it, it would be Chelsea, man.
Yeah, I think so. They were a better team in the second half. Just on positioning, Sasha swapped. Interesting to me at least, to know that Mauricio Pochettino has swapped it over so that Chelsea are in what is traditionally the away dugout now, because that one is smack bang on the halfway line where the other one's kind of 10 yards further
down. I was confused and I was thinking, am I misremembering this? But yes, he did switch, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, marginal gains on that.
Yeah.
Anything you can do. Well, that's fantastic. Mo Salah with a fantastic assist in the build-up to that opening goal. And then a wonderful departure from the game. One of my moments in the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, Salah has to look at himself there, because he wasn't making much of a difference second half. At least Ben Doak actually, you know, revved up the crowd a little bit when he came on. But I have to say also at the start, I think Colwell did struggle to keep up with him in the first half. Yes, a slightly undignified exit for him, but I think...
Just for anyone who missed it, he's got a heavily bandaged hand. And when he's taken off for, a teenager?
A Ben Doak, yeah.
Yeah. He begins tearing off the bandages on his hand and throwing them with disgust to the turf. And pretty quickly the crowd catch onto this and begin to greet each strap of bandage with another ole. And the final one after he's actually off the field is magnificent. Chef's kiss.
Well, I didn't see it from the end.
I was right looking at that. Okay. So as we came off, and I'm thinking, oh, surely he's not going to keep going with this. But fair play to him. Yeah. Sticking with it. It ends his hot streak, though, doesn't it? Was it six consecutive opening days he scored on for Liverpool.
All right. So Chelsea going to win the league? Are Liverpool going to win the league? What were any hot takes from that game?
Hot take, number one. Chelsea need a proper goalkeeper. Robert Sanchez. Uh-huh. I was waiting for him to try to pass Liverpool in, and he did in the 88th minute and basically had to thank a miscontrol for not conceding.
Right.
So this whole chat of replacing Kepa, whether Robert Sanchez or Schmeichel, is absolutely insane.
Okay, Kepa, who's just, you know, a little footnote, supposedly heading to Madrid to replace the ACL'd Thibaut Courtois.
Yes. Mm.
Okay, Matt, your hot take?
I think Chelsea could qualify for the Champions League this season by finishing fifth. That's my hot take.
Just quickly on Sasha's hot take. How much did Chelsea actually pay for Sanchez?
It sounds like it's around 20, 25 million.
And if that's the case, it's bizarre for me that they didn't push to sign David Raya, because he's obviously shown himself to be one of the best goalkeepers in the league over the last couple of seasons. The deal Arsenal struck is, I think, £3 million for the initial loan and then £27 million in a year. So if Chelsea had just stumped out a few million pounds more, they could have got guaranteed quality in Raya. And I've seen Raya over the past two seasons, and I can confirm he would not be passing it out from the back quite as sloppily as Sanchez did.
Fair enough. That 10 million, though, that they saved from that might be crucial when it comes to the Caicedo.
But this is the whole thing. Historically, the keepers are underpriced. And, you know, if they're looking to spend 150 million on Caicedo.
How much do they pay for Kepa then?
Overpriced. Yeah. Look, I think the problem with Kepa was this was a bad moment for them, because Alisson just went for stupid money. So that kind of influenced it. But yes,
it's funny how and now it's midfielders that are destroying all precedents. Okay, well, that was what happened on Sunday, apart from the Brentford bit, which we'll be coming on to in a bit. But next up, let's talk about how the weekend began Friday evening at Turf Moor.
Hello, Taylor Payne here, host of The Athletic's Newcastle United podcast, Pod on the Tyne. We're back and bringing you Double Bubble this season with two shows a week. So join myself, George Cork and Chris Wolf, and Jacob Whitehead as we dissect all the thrills and spills around NUFC, including the return of Champions League football to St James's Park for the first time in two decades. Just search for Pod on the Tyne wherever you get your podcasts and hit follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Haaland and Alvarez wait in the middle. It's back for Alvarez. And now it's Haaland. And now it's 2-0. What a finish from Erling Haaland.
Premier League season began Friday evening with Burnley hosting Man City. The visit of the Champions League Turf Moor saw lighters being thrown at heads, booing. from some in the crowd when the players took the knee, and one angry man storming the pitch to accost Man City players. That was Pep Guardiola, of course, who was having a go at Erling Haaland, remarkably after his first half performance.
It just feels so performative to me, that. It's just, I sort of see right through it, and I think Haaland did as well a little bit. You know, obviously Nathan Redmond was just a bit too far away for him to reach. So I better get the big man instead.
Right. I was just going to
quickly say, Haaland went on Sky Sports News afterwards, and Sky Sports afterwards, and spoke about what it was. And Pep was basically telling Haaland off for shouting at Bernardo Silva at the very end of that half. Uh-huh. And I do remember that incident happening where, you know, Bernardo has passed it to someone else instead of Haaland, and just absolutely loses his mind for no apparent reason. So I think that is important context, but it still felt very unnecessary to do that smack bang in the middle of the pitch. I understood why Pep needed to have a word with him, but just not right in the middle of the pitch.
And then push away the camera.
Yeah.
A bit Phil Brown-esque. Erling Haaland with the opening goal of this Premier League season, and then adding another. It's the fourth season in a row that he scored a brace on the opening day of a league campaign. Madness. Worst news for City, who were, I think, pretty comfortable throughout the game, is that Kevin De Bruyne, has continued his problems with injuries, having only just come back from that hamstring problem in the Champions League final. He's now going to be out. Well, they're awaiting, I think, a verdict in the next few days about how long he's going to be out for. The sense is it's going to be at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it seemed like a strange decision to start him, given that he barely, if at all, featured in pre-season, did he?
It's the same injury, isn't it?
Mm. You wonder why they rushed him back for this game in particular, and it looks like they'll pay the price. But you wonder if that might mean that they move again in the transfer market for somebody else. But it's sad, isn't it? Because Kevin De Bruyne has been one of the best players the Premier League's ever seen, and you don't want it to kind of just fizzle out by him becoming a kind of perma-injured player.
Indeed. Sky Sports running a stat in that game that Man City had spent $424 million on their current defence, which is $64 million more than Burnley have spent on all the players that they've ever bought in their entire history. Well, I mean, I guess we knew that there's a bit of a cap. Well, no, Sasha.
Well, but I was about to say, Burnley did spend 66 of that million, of those million, on players going into the starting lineup against City. So, you know, they're sort of upping it as well. But Kompany kind of did sort of already make excuses before the start of the game by saying, look, you know, effectively half a new team coming together, you would expect not to have too much cohesion for the first few games, which I think kind of what we saw here. But I also thought before the game, again, Pep was actually generally a little bit funny, because, you know, they were trying to figure out the formation with him, and they asked him, oh, is this right the way we're set up? They'll move. And they did. So, and I think this is one of actually the interesting things to watch with City now, is just like how fluid these formations are, because you look at them on paper and you can never guess what they're going to do. And I mean, at the end of last season, I went to see Brighton City, and that was a lot of fun because it was just movement. And I mean, it's difficult to play for one side, but how do you defend against that?
Wow. That's a problem that Sevilla are going to be pondering as they approach the European Super Cup midweek. Man City's next game after that will be Newcastle. Newcastle, who had arguably the performance of the weekend. They, who weren't mentioned by any of our pundits in Thursday's show in the top four, likely top four come the end of the season, took on a Villa side who a lot of people were very positive about and proceeded to give them their biggest defeat under Unai Emery. 5-1 the score there. The philosopher Trolled writes in to say, I can't wait to hear the pain in your voice as you guys discuss how good Newcastle are. Hopefully we'll be given more than a one-minute slot now that we have the best midfield in the league. Do they, Jay? Do they have the best midfield in the league?
I've got to say, I've been really excited to see how Sandro Tonali was going to fit into that Newcastle team. It was a move that kind of came out of nowhere and certainly caught a lot of attention. And he was phenomenal. He was absolutely brilliant. I think he's got such a wide range of passing, for one. He's also getting stuck into tackles. I know James Horncastle talks a lot about how people seem to think he's a Pirlo regen, but he's not quite that. But he just had everything to his game, and the way that he combined with Bruno Guimarães was a joy to watch. And I think the scenes when he scored that opening goal, I mean, Newcastle couldn't have asked for anything more. But I think I wasn't necessarily saying that Newcastle would get in the top four. I think it will be difficult for them with the Champions League as well. But what I did say, or what I have told other people in conversations with them, is that Isak barely played last year. I think he only played 22 times, and obviously a lot of them were substitute appearances where his fitness wasn't fully up to speed. So I said he's going to be a huge handful this season. I mean, just look at his second goal in particular, the composure to kind of dink that. I think he's going to be an absolute handful this season. So yeah, I'm really excited to see.
Goal that, because he dinks the keeper, but also a defender who's on the goal line, huh?
Yeah. I mean, he a little bit Thierry Henry-esque in a way. I don't know if that's also because he's got quite a slender frame for a centre forward, but I think that combination of exquisite finishing, very quick, very composed dribbler as well, I think he's a brilliant talent.
But that finish was extraordinary because no one read it. The keeper is down, like no one on the pitch reads it, and he just dinks him, and everyone's like, what just happened? I mean, it was supreme bit of skill from him. And I also thought with Tonali, aside from the passing and everything, he ghosted in for the first one deceptively quickly. He was nowhere near that ball. It was quite an interesting spinning cross from Gordon as well. And yeah, so he looks absolutely superb signing. 47 passes completed out of 53 in that midfield. It's going to be running the game for them, possibly, with Guimaraes.
Yeah, it's also a good moment for Anthony Gordon as well, because didn't have the greatest first 6 months at Newcastle. And I think there was a game where he got substituted off. It might have been against Brentford, actually.
And he kicked
off with Eddie Howe. Obviously did really well at the under-21 European Championship. I think he won player of the tournament, didn't he, off the top of my head. But that pass and movement for that opening goal is exceptional as well. And that, you know, I think Newcastle's recruitment has been quite good. You've got Tonali, Gordon, Harvey Barnes, all these young players who are 23, 24, 25 and can only kick on and get better and better.
Yeah, Eddie Howe flexing his bench, bringing on Barnes and Callum Wilson, who both added to the scoreline as they ran up the numbers there. For Villa, beaten by four goals by the Magpies, or four-goal margin, just like they were under Steven Gerrard, for perspective. Also losing Tyrone Mings as well. It looks nasty, Matt.
It does, yeah, and it's not a great start to the season, is it? You can lose a game 5-1 against a team playing really well, but to lose Emi Buendia probably for the season and Mings,
really? ACL,
6 to 8 months, isn't it? So let's say at least for the majority of it, and Mings didn't look in good shape at all. It feels a bit desperate that they're, as we record on Sunday night, trying to pip Everton to Jack Harrison to kind of bolster their numbers a little bit. So yeah, interesting. Interesting times for Villa coming up. They go to Burnley, don't they, in a couple of weeks. They've got Everton at home next weekend. So chance to pick up some points, but you don't want to be starting the season with a thumping and two significant injuries.
But also, this for me, this game completely exposed them. Because one of the great mysteries of last season was high Villa line, not very hard press. Why on earth does no one take advantage of this? And this game was just unbelievable. For the fourth goal, and Andros Townsend after the game on analysis was saying, oh, you know, they're chasing the game. They're not chasing the game. Their back line is flat back line. It's 30 yards away from goal. The ball is 45 yards away from goal. Three Newcastle players pass it around three Villa players and just play them in. That's not chasing the game. It's a complete failure of the system. And it happened on two other occasions as well. And it just looks like a complete disaster.
Wow, Sasha. What do you think about Newcastle's prospects this year?
I mean, I was listening to the preview pod, so Newcastle apparently were going to be 7th, Villa 6th.
I mean, it could happen. 90 minutes of football, so...
I think what we could say, opening games of the season can often be quite misleading. So let's see what changes Emery makes. Newcastle, one thing I would have to give as well for predictions as well, Adrian Clarke did say either Isak or Wilson plays, but not both. And I think you could see here that would work really, really well. Gordon looks like a new player. I think they could threaten top four at this rate, especially given, you know, the game we saw Chelsea against Liverpool. There are more severe problems there, I think, in midfield than Newcastle currently have.
So. Right. And Newcastle, who'll be facing Man City next Saturday evening. Were they to win that?
Big, big, big message.
I think it might be a bit simplistic, but the key for Newcastle might be finishing either second or bottom of their Champions League group and avoiding the Europa League, basically, because that seems to mess with everybody in the Premier League when you do Thursday, Sunday, doesn't it? Obviously, they might feel they'd have a decent chance of winning that, but in terms of getting back into the top four, I think you either want to be, you know, getting through to the last 16 of the Champions League or not playing European football after Christmas.
I hear you. Arsenal also had a win, although they got a bit of a scare, Matt, because the won Nottingham Forest. Three remarkable goals in this game. The Arsenal ones, first of all, Nketiah, with his 14th goal in his last 16 starts at the Emirates, with the wonderful assist from Martinelli.
Did he mean it?
I don't think he meant it for Nketiah. I think he probably meant to go and pick it up
himself.
Was he
trying to do a roulette and then bring it, carry it through for himself?
I think so.
But he knocked it by accident on the way through as you know, understandably. But yeah. Okay,
yeah, that's
enough.
What I think he was trying to do.
Thanks for backing me up, Jay. I thought I was being bitter Forest fan.
No.
What were your feelings on Bukayo Saka's?
That was absolutely amazing, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, that was like Hasselbank levels of hitting the ball hard. Really, I was going to say really enjoyable. It wasn't for me, but yeah.
Not much of the first half, I guess, post Brennan Johnson's early chance was enjoyable for Forest fans. But then, kind of out of nowhere, was this run from Elanga, lightning fast, and what seemed like a split second later, Taiwo Awoniyi had put the ball in the back of the net, and all of a sudden it was game on.
Yeah, Awoniyi was a big miss from the start. He got injured in pre-season, and that's why he couldn't start this game. But the real positive for Forest to take here was that in these kind of away fixtures last season, they'd go 2-0 down, crumble and lose 5-0, which is exactly what they did at the Emirates last season. So they didn't have much slash any of the ball for a long period of it, but they were bloody minded enough to stick in the game and wait for Arsenal to miss a few chances. And yeah, they could have got something from it in the end. You know, I didn't agree with Steve Cooper that VAR should have looked at that potential Declan Rice handball. I didn't think that was a penalty, but there were definite positives for Forest to take from it. But you know, as I've said, it's all about the home games for Forest. The first four home games are Sheffield United, Burnley, Brentford, Luton. So they've got to take at least 7 points from those, because they go to United, City and Chelsea as their next away game. So they're probably not going to get very many from that. But it's been interesting from a Forest supporter's perspective to hear Steve Cooper being a bit more direct in his requests for reinforcements. He's always sort of towed the party line quite well in terms of managing up as well as down. But now he's saying, please can I have some more players.
Will that play well with the owners?
Yeah, I think it will. But I think the problem is that Forest are waiting to pick up the scraps from everybody else. You know, they've been looking at Sangare from PSV all summer. Now all of a sudden you hear Liverpool, if they can't get Lavia or Caicedo, they're going to go in for him. So Forest basically have to wait until everybody else has had first dibs on the good players and then pick up Chris Wood.
Who do Forest need?
They need a backup for Awoniyi because he's injury prone. He didn't play 90 minutes last season and there's not much goal threat without him. They need another goalkeeper. I think that's fair. And they probably need another central midfielder. And left back, we thought we definitely needed a left back. Ollerena played there on Saturday and was really good, but he's right footed and he's a right back. So we're going to need one of those as well. Whether they get any remains to be seen. But yeah, Arsenal were all right too.
But I got to say, your first team goalkeeper is excellent. I thought he had a pretty good game against Arsenal. And that save against Rice, pings it from just outside the box, takes a small deflection, taking it further into a corner, and Turner gets across and turns around the post. Lovely.
It's got to be such a weird thing, that, for him, hasn't it? Yeah. You know, yeah. Really, really strange and disorientating.
So he's former Arsenal, but never played for them?
He played a few games in the Europa League, didn't he, last season?
But he literally left a few days before. Yeah. So in my head, I was thinking, has he even trained with Nottingham Forest? He's probably just stayed down in London and just met them at the stadium.
Okay. But it's actually got your seal of approval.
Yeah, I mean, he had a lovely game. I agree about the backup, Horvat, who played for Luton last year. He's very much a championship goalkeeper. I think they need someone a bit better than that.
Okay. Will Arsenal need a replacement for the newly arrived Julian Timber?
Yeah, it didn't look good, did it? That's for sure. And just when you thought, you know, Arsenal, they stuck with the same lineup for most of last season, didn't they? And they've added a bit of depth. I mean, they do have Tomiyasu and Ben White who can play there, so maybe it's not the worst.
Still got Zinchenko to come back as well, because that's why Timber was playing on the left.
Timber exiting early. Plenty of fans, meanwhile, entering late.
So from what I understood, what's happened so far, so they're effectively introducing this NFC system, which has been getting... So I think the whole idea around the Premier League is that eventually all the clubs are going to be on the same platform, so you can click in and out of all these grounds and et cetera, and everything. The whole place is going to go ticketless, including away tickets. So I think clubs are rolling out this technology. So Liverpool have rolled this out 2 years ago, and they had issues in pre-season friendlies where people couldn't get in and there was like half an hour delay. I don't know if Arsenal tried it in the pre-season friendlies, but they ended up with 35,000 people, it was reported, being stuck outside at kickoff time.
Right.
Which isn't great at all.
No, it was great if you're watching at home, because we've got an extra half hour of build-up with Joe Cole and Rio. There were problems getting Brentford Spurs underway on Sunday. We'll hear more about that in a moment or two.
Hey there, Totally Listener. It's me, Tim Spears, and I'm here to tell you about the Daily Football Briefing. It's out every weekday, telling you exactly what you need to know from the world of football from those who know the game best. Start each day with David Ornstein telling you why Arsenal are signing that player, or Liam Toomey explaining Chelsea's latest baffling move, or Rafa Hoeneckstein bringing the biggest Bundesliga antics. It's all there in under 15 minutes. The Daily Football Briefing, available now and every day from wherever you're listening to this podcast.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Well, the Premier League's been getting underway this weekend. The Women's World Cup has been sorting out its semi-finals. Four nations that will be taking each other on. None of them have ever won the World Cup before. You've got Spain against Sweden. That's on this coming Tuesday. Sweden having knocked out the holders, USA, and then team of the tournament so far, Japan. And in the other semi-final on Wednesday, it'll be England up against hosts Australia, who were victorious in a particularly
glorious shootout.
Dramatic
shootout. 21-year-old Courtney Vine at her first World Cup can write the Matildas into history.
France are obviously one of the pre-tournament favourites, and I think one of the issues Australia have had at this tournament has obviously been the unavailability of Sam Kerr, and it feels like, certainly the games I've watched, Caitlin Ford's kind of been running Australia's offence by herself. So to even take France to extra time and then penalties, I think was a pretty good achievement. And then it just had it all. It had penalties being retaken, and then I think it was Kenza Dali, her name is. Still, the penalty was still saved by Mackenzie Arnold. There was just
saved
everything
the first
going
time,
on.
Had to retake, saved the second time. Incredible.
So there was just all those kind of shenanigans going on. Then Australia had a chance to win, and then they missed. It was just the gift that kept on giving. Isn't it the longest penalty shootout in Women's World Cup and Men's World Cup history?
20 penalties.
I think
penalties.
So.
Could be.
Wow. I think so.
All followed avidly by people all over Australia and indeed on aeroplanes.
One random person, not following it.
Yeah,
I have to say a shout out. I don't know if it's going to be their last World Cup. Wendy Reynard and Eugénie Le Sommer. I mean, they're like the last remaining players from the great Lyon side. And they both took excellent penalties. So if that's the final thing they do for France, you know, fair.
Very nice. You can hear more about the semi-final lineup on the Athletic Women's Football Podcast with Michelle Owen. And they'll be, of course, across the semi-finals with new editions every match day. Totally Football Show European edition will be returning this Tuesday if you're interested in a bit of continental news as the various European leagues get back underway. We've already had the Bundesliga with some action there, the Super Cup this weekend, and Ligue 1 is back underway. We'll be talking about Roberto Mancini's shock resignation with Italy, Jude Bellingham scoring on his Real Madrid debut in La Liga, Kylian Mbappe watching from the stands as PSG had a disappointing start, goalless draw for them, but maybe positive news over Mbappe. And we'll also be hearing about Harry Kane and his Bayern debut in that aforementioned Super Cup. That's all coming up on Tuesday with Rafael Hoeneckstein, Julian Laurens, Alvaro Romeo and James Horncastle. So right now, though, let's touch on the team that Harry left behind, Brentford. Sorry, not Brentford. Spurs, they're called, Jay, who took on Brentford.
I actually got a phone call from my dad this morning, and he was in a very serious tone. Oh. And it was just to ask me if I could give him a programme of the first game that Tottenham played without Harry Kane.
Really?
And he's not a Tottenham fan, by the way. He's just an avid football fan.
Who was on the cover?
Matthias Jensen, because right. It's obviously it's Brentford's home game.
Were it me, I'd want the last one that Kane played in, I think. But then I guess this is the dawn of a new era. You were there to witness it. And what did you think?
I thought Tottenham played pretty well. I was impressed by James Maddison, considering that was his debut for the club. Everything pretty much ran for him straight away. And there was actually a situation where Son came off in the second half and Maddison took the armband, which caught me by surprise. But yeah, I thought Maddison did really well. Basuma, I think everybody kind of forgotten about Basuma because his first season at Tottenham didn't go particularly well. But
well,
I thought,
he was man of the match for the...
I thought he was very, very good. Yeah. Progressing the ball out from the back, making some passes into good areas. And then Destiny Adogie as well, who was on loan at Udinese last season. I thought he was fantastic for them as well. Great driving runs down the left-hand side. Obviously, the biggest thing for Tottenham is can they replace Kane's goals? And Richarlison was... He was okay, you know, up against the back three of Ethan Pinnock, Nathan Collins and Christopher Eye. And I think Pinnock in particular did a really good job on Richarlison. So there's still things that Tottenham need to work out. But I think the fact that they were 2-1 down at one point and Brentford were definitely in control at that stage, I think to come back and get a point was probably a fair result overall.
Looking at the stats, it seems like a much more attacking performance from Spurs. 358 touches in the attacking third. Which is well more than they managed in any game last season. They also took the lead in this game with that thumping header from Romero, who was subsequently then removed for having, well, thumped his head, I guess.
Yeah, so basically Romero and Brian Mbeumo had a collision maybe after 10, 12 minutes in the game, and they both received treatment for quite a while, which contributed to the 11 minutes of added time at the end of the first half. Yeah, Romero then scores, and pretty much as soon as he scores with his head, he comes off and he resisted it. You know, he said, I'm fine multiple times. He was given a thumbs up, and Postecoglou said after the game that they'd basically been monitoring it, waiting to kind of get a little bit more information as to how Romero was doing. And then I think he decided basically as he scored that they were going to take him off regardless anyways. And, you know, Postecoglou spoke, I think, quite smartly on the topic, just saying he's the last person who I should be listening to in that moment. Like, we're the ones with the information as to whether it's okay for him to play or not. Right. But then there was a little bit of frustration from him that basically Tottenham didn't fill out the substitution form correctly. So it should have gone down as a concussion substitute, but it went down as a normal substitute.
So who was frustrated about that?
Postecoglou, because it then prevented him from making another substitution later on in the game.
Ange was complaining about that, but he only made three subs.
But I think someone else pointed out that you can only make subs in certain windows,
True, yeah,
so if he's made subs at three different points, the concussion sub would have meant he could have made the other one.
It's fair.
Okay. How do you feel about Brentford's performance?
Yeah, I think it was pretty good. This was really the litmus test for the no David Raya era and the no Ivan Toney era. Obviously, I think it's well documented because Thomas Frank has spoken about it a lot that Brentford had a really good record without Ivan Toney last season. 13 points out of a possible 15 in the five games they played. Only a bizarre own goal against Nottingham Forest prevented that from being five wins out of five. But what I've kind of been telling people when they talk to me is that Sharda, Johan Visser and Brian Mbeumo worked at the end of last season as a backup plan when the pressure was off. So was it going to work when opponents know that that's going to be Brentford's plan A? And it did work pretty successfully, to be fair. Mbeumo and Visser got a lot of space in behind Tottenham in the first half. But then I think Tottenham just kind of gained control in the second half a little bit, maybe showed their quality a little bit more. But I think it was still a pretty good performance from Brentford. And to be honest, the biggest thing overall is, was Mark Flecken going to be up to standards as David Raya's replacement? There was a little bit of, you know, worry from the fan base, shall we say, about some of his performances in pre-season. But I have to say, I thought he was phenomenal. And when you put into the context that Ben Mee was injured, and he was Brentford's first choice centre-back last season, I think he played 37 out of 38 games. He was missing. Nathan Collins was making his debut for Brentford. You've got Christopher Eye, who's right-footed and normally plays right centre-back or right-back, playing on the left-hand side of a back three. I think there was a lot of potential for there to be some teething issues, shall we say. But I thought Flecken was remarkably composed on the ball, very good at claiming from crosses and set pieces and the like. And his distribution was phenomenal as well. There were a couple of passes he pinged out to the left to Rico Henry, which were inch perfect. So, you know, he may as well have just been a Raya 2.0. So hats off to Brentford again on his audition. He looks like he's up to scratch.
Brilliant. All right. 2-2 it finished then, the first game of this post-Kane era. And yeah, that's something that when we last spoke, Jay, we weren't certain was going to happen. There were still suggestions that despite everything, Harry might kind of blink at the prospect of leaving North London. But off he goes. And I mean, he's missed enough games that this game felt normal enough. But it's going to be quite weird for Spurs fans this season.
Yeah, I mean, it would be remiss of me not to point out that, you know, he had the opportunity to win a trophy in his first game at Bayern Munich and it didn't happen.
Right, I mean, so, poor chap, he came on already 2-0 down.
You can take the boy out of Tottenham, but you can't take him.
Well, have you seen the reaction in Germany? This is something we'll discuss more with Rafa on Tuesday, but the headlines were, Kane has arrived, the title has gone. The curse of
that is
Kane
cruel.
Is already
well, tell
trending
people in Munich,
in Germany.
Been, the club shop has been selling out of Kane shirts.
Yeah.
They're all so excited about him.
Yeah, well, I mean.
They should be. I mean, I think we all have memories of Kane and the things that he's been doing. I mean, for me, big standout is October 2017, Liverpool went to Wembley. And I think Maradona might have been in that game as well. And looking at Kane, I think he would have appreciated it because basically Kane single-handedly destroyed Liverpool with some help from his mates. But he got Dejan Lovren substituted after like half an hour. He scored two brilliant pass to set up, I think it was Son. Dele Alli actually scored in that game as well. So very much part of that first Pochettino team there. And and I think in a way, he's a classic striker, which doesn't make you go, whoa, but he always scores. And then also, as he started dropping deeper, with the passes from the deep as well, it's like an extra dimension to his game. So he has developed.
I think one of the biggest compliments you could pay Kane is that for the last 4 years or so, it's almost felt inevitable. If he stayed in England, he'd break Alan Shearer's record, which kind of tells you everything you need to know about the different types of goals that he scores as well. Sasha just said it, that he's a complete striker. We've seen him score penalties. We've seen him score free kicks. We've seen him score with his left foot. We've seen him score with his right foot. And, you know, he scored 30 goals for Tottenham last year, which I think was 43% or around about that number of the total goals Tottenham scored that season. Just shows you how reliant they were on him. And the fact that he did that in a team that was completely misfiring kind of says it all.
It's going to be interesting to see how it works out for him in Bavaria, as I say. Raphael Honigstein will be with us for Tuesday's Europod to bring us all the reaction to that. A more measured take, perhaps. Now, elsewhere in the Premier League this weekend, Burnley defeated Friday night. The other two promoted sides both got losses in their opening games. Luton went down 4-1 at Brighton. Sheffield United at home to Palace. It was a 1-0 defeat for them.
Can I just say, for Sheffield United, who are obviously in for a long, tough season, Gustavo Hama is a really, really good signing.
Okay.
He's been absolutely superb in the Championship last season. 9 goals, 10 assists. Really, really good player. Brazilian attacking midfielder. You just wonder why they haven't done more in the market. I mean, maybe they say they don't have the money to do so.
Matt, actually, since you're making that bold prediction, somebody was writing in asking to hear which team you were predicting, to everyone's great surprise, might be in relegation trouble. This season. Who would that be then?
Quickly, can I say, didn't you predict Brentford last year?
No, I didn't. I said Wolves would struggle last year was my prediction, and struggle they did. So I got that one absolutely.
Just checking, just keeping you honest.
Are you still kind of creeping along on the fumes of the momentum from that?
From Bournemouth.
From Bournemouth.
Yeah, we'll always have Bournemouth, yeah.
who are you getting?
There's nobody who I think is, going to be a surprise struggler, because I think Sheffield United are going to go down. It's going to be really difficult for Luton. I think Everton absolutely stink. And then there's a couple of other teams who will be around the bottom who you would expect to be around the bottom, like Wolves and Forest. So I can't see that there's somebody who's going to plummet, you know, maybe West Ham. But would that be a massive shock? I don't think so. I think there are too many teams who are likely to be battling relegation who you would expect for there to be some, like a Brentford or somebody to get bothered with that.
I hear you. Let's talk about Brighton a little bit after that 4-1 win. Took a while coming, but eventually the goals started flowing. Solly March opened the scoring. Ja Pedro, who got booed throughout the match by Luton fans because he used to play for Watford, added one on his debut. Evan Ferguson also added to his growing legion of fans with a goal. And then there was one from Simon Adingra. Tell me more, Sasha.
Obviously, one of those players who has a season in Belgium at Union Saint-Gilloise.
Nice.
Does really well and then gets into the first team at Brighton, like Mitoma the season before.
Nice.
Adingra last year had 15 goals, I think, and 15 assists in 51 games in all competitions. Union Saint-Gilloise finished third and got into the quarterfinals of the Europa League.
Uh-huh.
So, and he was key part of that team. So, yeah, very, very exciting.
What position, Sash?
So I think he is kind of attacking midfielder stroke winger.
Okay.
So I think if you look at what Brighton are doing season after season,
uh-huh,
losing all these key players. De Zerbi in the pre-match test press conference said, that Caicedo is already gone. Have we seen any difference? Absolutely not, because right, the guys are coming through, including James Milner, absolutely seem to have very little effect on how well they play. One player you didn't mention as well is Pervis Estupiñán.
Yes.
Absolutely destroyed his flank. Can I say he took the piss out of Luton on occasions in that game? Again, for the third, he had defenses of sixes and sevens. Eventually, Pelle makes a mistake and, Adingra scores. But it's really just, how do they do it?
Well, it is only the first game of the season, to borrow your expression, from earlier. And they were playing a Luton team who are widely predicted to struggle. A wonderful stat about the different level of experience in these two sides on Saturday. De Zerbi's side with 1,600 Premier League appearances under their belts. Luton's 11 had 63. In fact, James Milner on his own has more than 10 times as many Premier League appearances as the entire Luton team can boast. Remarkable. Anyway, it was a great start from Brighton eventually. And off they go.
But I think also in that Brighton team you get Van Hecke, a mm-hmm, very young centre-back who only has a handful of appearances, still didn't play in the Premier League before last season. So they're going to gradually bring in those players through. And I think it's that mixture of experience and youth, which, you know, it's almost a cliche, but this is what Luton don't have. I mean, if you look at the signings that were in the starting lineup for Luton, you know, they're from Stoke, Wolves, keepers from Blackburn, this guy from Barnsley, Rotherham, they're all championship experience. And, you know, I saw Luton last year in the last game at Kenilworth Road before they went up, and they basically just smashed Sunderland through physicality. And I don't think they've really changed it up that much for the Premier League. And for me, I think this is going to be a step they just cannot make. And I have them rock bottom because I just think the difference in quality is so huge.
But it's sensible to buy a load of championship-ready players,
yeah,
in the expectation of going down, yeah, rather than get, yeah, Jesse Lingard for 100 grand
fair
a week, or
yeah,
whatever.
Absolutely fair.
Although that'd be fun. It's always fun when...
Well, Ross Barkley can fill that role, I guess.
There you go. Elsewhere in the Premier League this weekend, Bournemouth had a 1-1 draw with West Ham. Any thoughts on that?
West Ham, no new players in the starting lineup. Have they signed anyone?
Yeah, Alvarez.
Ah, of course.
They have signed him now. Ward-Prowse, medical.
Yeah.
Fee agreed with Maguire.
Very nice. Everton lost 1-0 at home to Fulham. Yikes.
Bent Leno.
Unfortunately, though.
Mm-hmm.
They were unfortunate.
Yeah, I think their XG was...
Tarkowski's...
2.98 off the top of my head. That could be wrong.
Yeah.
I think it was one of the highest XGs in Premier League history where they failed to score. And, I mean, that kind of happens when you've got someone like Neil Maupay up front who spurned multiple good chances.
Come on, Bent Leno.
Yeah, of course, Bent Leno had a great game. I'm not disputing that. Although that goal...
They also had a goal.
It should have stood. Yeah. Come on.
But Tarkovsky backs into him after he drops the ball.
No, it's Sasha.
No, he doesn't back into him initially, and then he backs into him after.
But if you're an Everton fan, I'm sure you must be furious about this.
If that goal opened
the scoring in this game, or would have had that goal stood, no?
Yeah, if I scored that goal in Sunday League and the referee disallowed it, I'd go absolutely mad.
Yeah.
Respectfully, of course. I wouldn't be...
For sure. But yeah, Leno climbs
over,
up and then lands
over,
on top of.
Tarkovsky very pointedly just backs into him. I just demonstrated how he backs into him. He probably isn't going to. Yeah, I think he probably should have stood.
Yeah.
But Tarkovsky did obstruct him a little bit.
Occasional reminder that Bobby Di Cordova Reed's sister, Marsha, is the Labour MP for Battersea, Balham and Wandsworth.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. I always like to pull that one out when I'm doing a full game.
All right.
Game.
Crikey, Matt, what a time to drop that. Man United Wolves on Monday night, that's it. Any final thoughts about the game so far, Sasha?
I think it's good to be back.
Yes.
Definitely good to be back. I think the previous season went on for way too long. Yeah. But having taken, you know, a couple of months off, I'm ready for this. This is quality.
Good. Jay?
Exact same. I think when that, you know, music was blasting out at the G-Tech Stadium earlier, I just felt like, you know, I've had a good couple of months, been on a couple of holidays. I was like, now I'm ready to just get stuck into it.
Right. Cut to week two. Oh, my God.
Just wait until I've got to go to an away game at the other end of the country yeah. and trains are getting cancelled. I'll quickly change my tune.
When Brentford's playing Burnley?
Matt?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, last season was such a grind professionally, Chelsea-wise, that it was just nice to be at a kind of refreshed Stamford Bridge where everybody wasn't just really angry.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 90 minutes in and not too many hearts have been broken so far, but it did seem there was a lot of positivity going around the various grounds, so far at least. Anyway, hopefully that's something that we'll be continuing with. We're back on Tuesday with the European pod, as mentioned, and then on Thursday to look ahead to Match Day 2. For now, many, many thanks for being with us, to Jay, to Sasha, to Matt, and producer Charlie. And you, listen, I hope you have a great week until we catch up with you again. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.